This podcast was recorded Friday, March 18th at 11:38 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like a legislative map will last longer than a Browns quarterback.
When was the last time the Browns had a quarterback for 10 years?
Otto Graham? I don't know. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians who pay attention to one group of voters in the spring, then another group in the fall. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Yes, it is primary season. Coming up on the podcast, a look at how Russia and its invasion of Ukraine has entered the race for U.S. Senate here in Ohio. But first,
strike three call.
The Ohio Redistricting Commission has taken three swings at drawing a state legislative map, and three times it has missed.
The Ohio Supreme Court this week called strike three on the commission, rejecting its latest version of maps for the Ohio House and Senate. The court said the latest maps, once again, too partisan and drawn to clearly favor Republicans.
Unlike in baseball, though, the commission gets another pitch, or maybe even more. The court has given the commission until Monday, March 28th, to present a fourth map. In blunt terms, the majority said the commission should hire an independent map maker who answers to the entire commission, not just Republican legislative leaders.
The minority on the court called the court's decision an exercise of raw political power, nothing less, nothing more.
The decision all but kills the chance of a regular primary on May 3rd. Lawmakers may split the primary, one for statewide and local races, one for legislative and congressional districts, or they may just delay the primary to June, July, August.
Could cancel it just like 2020?
I don't know about that, but anyway, it's chaos continues. And with joining us to discuss this chaos is Julie Carr-Smythe, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Julie, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Happy to be here.
You know, we couldn't have predicted this was going to happen.
Never.
I don't think. I think we knew it was going to be rough, but three cracks at the state legislative maps, two cracks at the congressional maps, and we're still not there yet. And the primary is, early voting is supposed to start in just about 2 weeks.
Yes, I don't think we could have predicted it, nor voters who supported these reforms. And I think that what we are seeing is both sides in some ways had seen at the outset an advantage to protracting this into the primary season, that maybe that would put pressure on the other side, and nobody is flinching so far.
It really is a game of chicken. It's there's not enough political will on the commission to draw, honestly, I mean, fair maps, maps that represent Ohio. That's all that I think this is coming down to. I mean, if you want to argue about whether or not the court should rule the way they did, but I mean, right, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all, we're talking about fair maps here. We're talking about maps that represent Ohio.
Well, there's no real bipartisanship. There's no willingness to compromise on the part of Republican leaders on the commission. And Julie, Mike DeWine this week basically said they need to put Democrats and Republicans in a room, map makers, and work this out. How much sway do you think he's going to have now?
You know, I'm not really sure. The process he described is what a couple rounds of this were described as to begin with. I mean, a lot of the moments of hope in this had to do with map makers either getting in a room with each other or at least communicating pretty openly about what they wanted. We've seen now publicly that the Democrats have put out the map that they would support and would vote for. We have seen plaintiffs in the cases put out maps that they would support and would drop the lawsuit if their map was taken up. So I'm not sure. I didn't see any movement toward going DeWine's way as of late this morning, Friday.
Yeah, and we're still waiting, of course, with the congressional map decision. That's still looming. It may have come by the time you hear this. And the primary, Julie, it's really very much in doubt. Frank LaRose has basically said we can't do legislative races on May 3rd.
Right. He issued a a directive overnight Thursday that's told the boards, you know, hold off. You can't put out, you can't make any more changes to ballots. You can't program voter registration tabulation machines with this kind of data because everything's on hold. Just hang tight and I'll let you know what happens. There's another deadline coming up in the federal case related to this on Friday. And LaRose seemed to be signaling that an immediate decision by a federal court could have some impact on the date of the primary.
And there was some pretty swift criticism of that statement that LaRose put out because he's a member of the Ohio Redistricting Commission. He voted for all three of these maps. They all three were ruled to be illegally gerrymandered to favor Republicans. And in that statement, he seems to be blaming Joe Biden. He seems to be blaming census data without taking any real responsibility himself.
I love the census data. At this point, you can't blame the census anymore. It's like blaming...
No, early on, it was an issue.
It's like blaming the quarterback who loses the Super Bowl for missing the first week of training camp. That was back in August we got those numbers late.
Right.
I mean, you can't blame that anymore. I mean, you could talk about outside influence
if you
want. I know, but it's silly.
Well, and the thing was that, you know, many of the interest groups, the voting rights advocates had said, you know, we could do a lot of things way back in April 2021, almost a year ago now, without that data. Like you could bring in some of the experts that have talked to the commission and so forth. So there were many things, whether they were political scientists, data scientists, fair voting folks, you know, they could have analyzed a lot of different maps even without the data.
Julie, the one thing that the court has not done yet has pulled the trigger on drawing its own maps. Now, I know it cannot draw the state map. The court itself cannot draw the state legislative maps. The Constitution is pretty clear on that. But there are some who think the court could just accept one of the other maps that's out there that they deem fair and constitutional, and they could draw the congressional maps. But we haven't even, there's been nothing in these decisions that have even hinted they're ready to go to that step yet.
No, you know, and surprisingly to some, to punt this back to this commission that has repeatedly basically, you know, what's that saying, you know, sort of, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, you know, but they punted it back a fourth time rather than doing that. I think they are precluded by the Constitution. And I also think they don't want to be accused of overstepping the role of the court and setting certain precedents in a first of its kind attempt.
What's the next shoe to drop here? Is it just we wait until March 28th, their deadline? I mean, this is such an absurd, you know, it is bordering insanity what you say. We're just expecting I don't even know what happens next. What happens next?
Right. I mean, they're playing the game of, you know, that the court doesn't have teeth other than this. I mean, I think the most scary thing the court has done thus far is called them all before the bench in person to talk about it. The last time we saw them actually move kind of swiftly, and they submitted a congressional map that was darn close to proportional to Ohio's party breakdown. But I think that Judge Marbley in the federal case may be the place to watch for the next shoe to drop. He has briefs due at the end of Friday, and it could be that he comes in and says this isn't fair to voters anymore.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. The voters really are left in limbo as to who they're going to vote for. Candidates, of course, I don't know where they're running. They don't know who their competitors might be. But, you know, bottom line is we often forget, but this is supposed to serve the voters. And it's not being done.
It's
right
not serving
now.
The voters at all.
No. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to a WOSU Public Media podcast. Everything you hear is funded by listeners like you. Become a member of WOSU Public Media today and support digital content like Snollygoster and the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast. Make a gift at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. If the primary is delayed until June or July, maybe even August, as Jim Renacci has floated, that gives the Republican candidates for U.S. Senate that much more time to beat up on each other.
Ooh, that is fun if you want to watch it. And it gives the candidates with loads of personal wealth to spend it on more TV ads. A new Fox News poll shows the race very much up in the air. 24% of Republican primary voters still remain undecided. Mike Gibbons, surprise, surprise, is in the lead with 22%, although he's basically tied with former state treasurer Josh Mandel at 20%. J.D. Vance is third at 11%, followed by former GOP chair Jane Timken and state senator Matt Dolan. They're in single digits.
Yeah, Jane Timken really falling off in recent months. This week, Russia became an issue in the campaign. It seems that several of the candidates have connections to Russia, and that is not a good thing right now, as everyone's seemingly cutting ties with the country that invaded its neighbor, Ukraine.
Associated Press correspondent Julie Carr-Smythe wrote that story this week, and we'll continue the discussion. Go from redistricting to Russian influence in the U.S. Senate campaign. Julie, the story begins with Ohio-made ball bearings in a Russian maker of freight cars, and the ball bearings are made by a company named Timken. That's where it begins.
That's right, exactly. And this is not the first time that Jane Timken, the former head of the Ohio Republican Party, who's running for Senate, has taken some heat for her name, which she shares with Fortune 500 company, the ball bearing maker. You know, the company has done dealing, has outsourced to China, and most people have probably seen those ads on the television or online. But in this case, Timken actually had supplied some ball bearings through a joint venture it signed in 2014 to these railroads. And, you know, it raises the issue, is she benefiting because she is a stockholder in that company and is married to a member of the board of trustees, a member of the Timken family? Does she bear any responsibility for it? Her campaign says that's absolutely not fair. Jane has never worked at the Timken company. She doesn't have any say over its decisions. But my story sort of just took a look at the fact that she owns, you know, some shares. Those shares went up, and she's really not the only one.
Yeah.
No, she's not the only one. J.D. Vance also has ties to Russia thanks to his investment in a video platform named Rumble. How close are those ties, Julie?
Well, he and some other conservatives, venture capitalists, had gone in on investing in Rumble right around the time that it was becoming a YouTube alternative, very attractive to the political right. After Facebook, now Meta, and Twitter had decided to sort of limit access to RT, which is the Russian state-run media, because of propaganda, the Russian government said, well, hey, we'll move everything over to Rumble. And so that has to be a money-making prospect for investors in that company. And the Vance campaign is not denying that, but they're basically saying that Rumble is supportive of free speech, even when when people find it offensive, and trying to contrast that with Twitter, which has very notoriously banned former President Trump. So that's another tie that I found in among these candidates.
But there's more. Mike Gibbons, his company recently sold its stake in a Belarusian company, which is connected to a Russian gas company. I'm sensing a pattern here, Julie.
Well, you know, it just shows that when you play with the big boys, then, you know, you're in the pool with the big boys at a time like this. This company there was a conglomerate that has the ties to this Belarusian company. It's called the Global M&A Association. And Mike Gibbons' company, BGL, is... they announced the deal, but his campaign told me that, well, they all announce each other's deals, and that doesn't mean that they're involved in the deals at all. It's just a way to promote one another. And so He sort of distanced himself from it. The interesting thing about this sale of the Belarusian machine building stakes to HMS Group is that HMS Group has Gazprom as one of its customers, and that's the majority owner in Nord Stream, yep, in the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So that's a huge deal. I mean, a lot of these are infrastructure type deals that we would be used to seeing out of a state like Ohio, a manufacturing based state, as manufacturing deals grow. But it does place some of these candidates in a precarious position.
So Josh Mandel, I guess, has less direct ties to Russia. He has taken some donations from the Temkin family, which is kind of funny to say. And his ex-wife's family's real estate company sold part of the Brooklyn Nets and Barclays Center to a Russian oligarch. So is it, there's some odd ties there. Is it safe to say at this point Russia does not come up in the campaign?
Well, it could be.
They all have ties.
Jane Timken is really who has taken the brunt of this, has come out very strongly in favor of Ukraine and in favor of strong sanctions against Russia. Rob Portman, whose seat they're all running for, leads or co-chairs the Senate Ukraine caucus.
Yeah.
And so he went around the state campaigning with Jane Timken a week or so ago, and apparently is behind her despite Timken's dealings in Russia. And I should say that in the course of my reporting on this, Timken did pull its business out of, it's suspended its operations in Russia. Certainly not because of me, but because
you don't know that you're always causing trouble, Julie. You might be the reason.
Because a lot of companies were in the process of evaluating what to do over there in the midst of my reporting. But anyway, yeah. So
is it safe to say, Julie, these are all pretty wealthy candidates? Is the question more which countries are these wealthy candidates not involved with? Because let's just face it, that's the way the economy is right now. Everyone's sort of connected. Now they're all cutting the ties with Russia, but you know they probably have ties with China and Saudi Arabia and other countries like that that aren't high on our fan list.
Well, I think it's always good to look at that when you're looking at millionaire candidates and a big slate of folks who are self-funding. What are their financial entanglements and how do those impact how they would act as a member of the U.S. Senate? And we shouldn't fail to mention that the Timken Company, which has been very generous politically for decades, the company goes back to the 19th century. The Timken Company has also given to Tim Ryan, the Democrat in the race. So when you're watching television and seeing hits on Timken and its entanglements in Russia, the political tentacles are further than anyone might have thought.
Julia, these connections to Russia are financial, but they are arguably tenuous and not, you know, this is not someone coming out and say, I support Vladimir Putin, obviously. But how do you think they play a major factor or a minor factor, but probably a minor factor, right, going forward?
Yes, I would say, I mean, for the most part, these candidates are defending Ukraine, as is much of the world, and are supporting sanctions against Russia. Those who are not, maybe are deflated a little bit in fighting this fight when we see that they are possibly benefiting financially from investments there.
Yeah, and the Senate does play a role in foreign policy. There's the Foreign Relations Committee. There's, they fund the military. They get to sign off on treaties and, worst case scenario, declare war. So it's not a foreign policy is certainly within the U.S. Senator's job description.
It's a little bit like a preview of what their financial disclosure forms might have said.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie Carr-Smyth, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Thanks very much for joining us here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, honoring the shrewdest politician, our political move. For the first time in the history of this podcast, we have a back-to-back weekly winner.
Yeah, last week we gave it to Mike DeWine for shrewdly declining to debate his Republican rivals for governor. And this week he gets it again for making everyone mad about his positions on guns.
He really did. Yes, you likely remember after promising to, quote, do something after the 2019 Dayton mass shooting, DeWine has instead loosened gun regulations. The latest this week, he signed the bill eliminating a special permit and the special training required to carry a hidden gun. He explained that decision this way.
About half the states now have this provision, and this is, I think, consistent with the United States Constitution.
Then in that same press gaggle, he then said he remains committed to tightening gun rules in Ohio.
We're still asking the state legislature to take action on a bill, which I think is a frankly a no-brainer. And that simply is, it says that violent repeat offenders who commit most of the violent crime today, if they are in possession of a gun, the judge should have the ability to put them away for at least 10 years.
So for signing the concealed carry law, the quote, constitutional carry law, and then saying he wants to tighten gun restrictions, he likely makes no one really that mad or makes everyone really mad, makes everyone happy, whatever he's trying to do. Mike DeWine, you are our Snollygoster of the Week.
Yes, he is. We'll see what happens with this primary. Jim Renacci also has backed out of that debate as well, so the debate was canceled. So no governor's debate in the primary, whenever the primary occurs.
If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, please email it to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes and wherever else you get your podcasts. Until next week, for our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.